So happy to have you listening in here on the Ideas Network. Larry Mueller here. And as I mentioned a little bit ago, we're going to be talking with you about preventing and treating skin cancers or carcinomas. Dr. Dick Niles, practicing dermatologist in Oconomowoc and Watertown for more than 25 years, joins us by phone today. He's a member of the American Academy of Dermatology. He's been a guest on our show many times and always been a pleasure to have him with us. And he's back once again. Melanoma, it can kill, probably will kill about 7,700 people in this country this year. One person in 74 can now expect to develop melanoma at some point in their lives. And that's up from one in 1,500 just 75 years ago. As we visit with Dr. Niles, I hope you'll join us. The number to call, 1-800-642-1234, or email us at talk@wpr.org. Love to hear from you. Dr. Dick Niles, thanks for taking time to be with us today. Appreciate it.
Always great to be with you, Larry.
What do we know about melanoma?
Well, we know quite a bit about melanoma. We know that it is almost the only skin cancer that could kill you within a relatively short time, like within a year. If you have a basal cell skin cancer or a squamous cell skin cancer and we don't see it for a few months or a year, well, then the scar is going to be a little bit bigger next year than this year, but it's generally not going to do terrible harm to you. But a melanoma, even a relatively innocuous-looking kind of thing that one could ignore, can be very damaging, and I think we all have heard about somebody in the last couple of years, some 43-year-old mother with a couple of kids who's in bad shape because of that terrible skin cancer.
So how does it kill so quickly?
Well, it's one of those cell lines that seems to be able to grow deeply into the skin and then escape either through blood vessels or less likely through nerves, but through blood vessels. And once it gets going into the bloodstream, then it gets trapped some places and it can grow up in that area. And it's like one of those weeds that you have in your sidewalk in the cracks that you put on a little bit of rain comes and that thing grows up and it's there all the time. You can't kill it. Whereas basal cell skin cancers and others are really pretty fragile, and they get killed off easily, and maybe they're more like the roses that you have to tend to and really take care of. But melanomas get around the body, liver, brain, other places pretty easily once they're deeper than just 1 millimeter deep.
Can they occur in parts of the body that we don't routinely that aren't routinely exposed to sun?
Yes. Although we think most of these happen with big sun exposure, big sunburns, there are some that occur in hidden areas. There are some that occur on palms and soles. Some that occur in the retina, and some that occur in the brain primarily, because all of those cell types start from the same origin. Nerve cells and pigmented cells sort of start from the same spot, and they can get goofed up. Some melanomas are undoubtedly related to big sunburn, and some are probably just goof-ups where one cell just goes crazy, and there's no rhyme nor reason to that one.
No. Well, we have some callers online to visit with you, Dr. Niles, and turn first to John in Milwaukee. John, hello to you. Thank you for calling.
Hello, and I'm glad you're having this program. My question is whether there's any correlation between various kinds of acne and skin cancers, and in particular, adult acne and skin cancers. And I can hang up and hear the answer.
Okay.
Sure. I would say the quick answer is no. Lots of people, maybe 85% of us all, have had acne as teenagers, and therefore it doesn't select us out very easily. I think you could take a couple of steps and say, well, I know my acne is going to be better if I'm exposed to the sun, so I'm going to get some sun, and then maybe I increase my risk of getting melanoma 50 years later by a tiny amount. But it's not probably a big enough amount to make any difference. the chance for any of us getting a melanoma this year, in the next 12 months, let me say, is 1 out of 10,000. Now, maybe if you had a tremendous amount of sun exposure on your face with acne, maybe you'd make that 2 or 3 out of 10,000, but it doesn't really make that much difference.
No. Do people in warmer climes, let's say somebody who's raised in Florida, for example, is the incidences of melanoma higher there?
Yes. It's a little bit difficult to say. Well, one can see skin cancers increasing as you go farther south.
Okay.
I think the greatest example, though, is the British prisoners with real light skin moving to Australia, and that population that has grown up with really light skin has a tremendously high risk of melanoma. And as we've talked about maybe before, the lifeguards are trained to look for melanoma on the beach because they're all pasty white folks, you know.
Okay. Jill and Racine, on to you now. Hi, Jill.
Hi, Jim. Larry, I'm sorry.
That's all right.
I've had seborrheic keratosis and two basals. That was 2007. I grew up in Texas, and I happened to spend 2 years in Taiwan, which is pretty tropical. Will this, is it likely to reappear?
Okay.
The basal cell skin cancers are not likely to reappear once they've been removed, but if the real question is, will you get more? Well, the chance is pretty great that you'll get more. You've had enough sun exposure to have two. Why shouldn't you have enough sun exposure to have three? So in the next few years, or the rest of your life, basically, every year or two, you should be looked at carefully and to make sure that you don't have any new little ones that are starting up. So it is likely that you'll have another one. But if you get at it real early, or you get at them when they're only sun-damaged spots and you use some liquid nitrogen on the surface, then you're doing some good. The seborrheic keratoses, which are rough, crusty barnacles on your back and chest and maybe face, those you have genetically, so undoubtedly you'll get more of those.
Yeah. All right. Thank you very much for calling. Appreciate it, Jill. Dorothy and Hayward, it's your turn now. Hi, Dorothy.
Hi. Hi,
morning.
Larry. Thank you for this lovely show.
Thank you.
I've just had a persistent sore on the side of my mouth, and it's probably about 4 weeks now, and I'm afraid I pick at it and squeeze it, and it scabs up, but it seems to come back, and I'm just wondering. I'm quite dark because I'm French-Canadian, and I hardly ever sunburn, but I just wonder if this is something to look into.
So tell me where in your mouth, the corner of your mouth? In the
About a half an inch on the right side of my mouth.
From the middle, half an inch over.
A half an inch from the corner of my mouth.
Okay, well, it's almost the same spot, I guess.
Yeah, I guess so.
If you have a spot that is persistent and an open wound, a sore that won't heal, a scabby area that goes on for a few months, so you might give it a little bit longer.
A little longer.
Then it may be a basal cell skin cancer. If you're after it every day, if you're if that's your new friend that you're sort of spending some time with every day.
A little bit.
Yeah, there you go. Maybe what you should do is to put on a little antibiotic ointment and a little Band-Aid and keep it covered most of the time so that your fingers don't go there.
Good idea.
But if you can't get rid of it, give it another few weeks or a month, then I think it should be looked at. But I would think that you can get rid of it.
Okay. Well, that's good news.
All right, Dorothy.
Well, we'll see you in a month if it's
good. But pay attention. Keep your finger away from your mouth there. All right? Thanks a lot for calling.
Well, you've been a great help. Thank you.
You bet. Mary and Butler, it's your turn. Hi, Mary.
Yes, how do you do?
How do you do?
Well, I have a problem that bothers me. About a year and a half ago, I had a funny growth on my nose, a red spot on my nose, and it was a funny growth on my nose. And I was living in a respite home at that time following an automobile accident. So they sent me to the hospital, and they looked at it, and they operated, and they removed it, and said that it was a kind of a precancerous condition caused by the sun. So maybe we're talking about that today. Anyway, they removed that, and I had left a scar on my nose. And not real bad, but it was there, and it's a red scar. Now, I came back home again here, And fairly recently, I'm walking down the sidewalk, and a strange man walked up to me, a fairly young man. He looked at me, and he said, "Where did you get that awful scar on your nose?"
No.
Yes. And then I thought, I think of the guy, why would some stranger come and talk to me about it? Well, anyway, I told him, I said, well, I'd had a surgery and whatever. And then we got to talking a little bit more, and he showed me a scar that he had from a surgery and on his wrist and whatever. But anyway, then we left. Well, when I went home, I took a good look in the mirror, and I thought, well, the scar is bigger and it's redder. It's getting all red around it. And when I saw my regular physician, he said, well, get this scar care stuff that you can put on your nose and make scars go away. Well, I've been trying it, but it doesn't help. It's getting redder, and it's gradually getting bigger, and it is more noticeable. And I thought, now every time I look in the mirror, what do I see? I see that scar that this man saw. Now, I'm concerned about this. We're talking about this. Why is it getting bigger? And it's sun-induced, and I've been shading my nose with a cap with a big visor and all that stuff like that, but it's not helping.
Okay, let me get to that. When did you have that procedure done?
A little more than a year ago.
Okay. So if you had a sun-damaged spot, and our word for that is an actinic keratosis, that's usually a little rough spot that sort of peels off and grows back and peels off and grows back, or then becomes persistently rough on the surface. And one can take care of those a number of different ways. But they biopsied it, and now you have this persistent red area. Usually, a scar turns white as time goes on. Usually the redness fades away because the red is blood vessels, and those blood vessels shrivel up as time goes on. So sometimes usually the scar will fade, become less red and more white. But if you then develop something at the edge, it could be that there's more sun damage beyond where they did the biopsy. And that would be a reasonable thing to think that the next place that you're going to have a precancerous spot should be right next door to where you currently have that one. So there's a lot of sun there. Now, you brought up the idea, well, since I've had this done in the last year, I've been wearing a hat. Well, that doesn't make much difference now. That might matter 20 years from now. But the sun damage has been done for all the years prior and then builds up. So I suspect that you have a sun damaged spot at the edge and you need some liquid nitrogen on the surface from your local dermatologist and you'll be in good shape.
Well, he's just concerned because the redness goes down. It's into the tissue around it. It's not just the scar. You can hardly see the scar. It's all around it.
Well, I think you need to have a dermatologist look at it because he or she will be able to tell you what's going on.
Yeah, you should go back and take a talk with a dermatologist for sure. Good advice. Thank you, Mary. Thanks, and good luck. Appreciate your call. Barbara in Appleton, we'll turn to you next. Thank you for calling. Hi.
Hi, thank you. I have a question regarding skin carcinoma, such as basal cell carcinoma and things.
Sure.
Has there ever been shown any connection to that in the eventual development of a blood cancer, such as leukemia?
I would say the answer is no to that in general. I think that generally we think of skin cancers as being related to sun and genes, and not that we go looking around for other kinds of skin cancer, other kinds of internal cancer. So I think there's no relationship with whether that's leukemia or lung cancer or breast cancer. Maybe the risk is a little bit higher in a tiny way, tiny risk higher, because you've already let one cancer grow. Maybe your immune system will let others grow. But I don't think there's much of a risk like that.
Okay, thank you.
All right. Thanks a lot for calling. Dr. Dick Niles, our guest today, practicing dermatologist in Oconomowoc and Watertown, member of the American Academy of Dermatology. Our guest as we talk with him about preventing and treating skin cancers or carcinomas. I'm Larry Mueller, Jim Packard, our producer here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Talking preventing and treating skin cancers or carcinomas today with Dr. Dick Niles. Just before we get back to that conversation, I want to mention that you have taken a day off our fall pledge drive. For every 700 donations, we're taking one day off. And we've taken a day off. You can help make it, too, by making your donation today. Join the 888, I believe it is, contributors who have already helped. So go to WPR.org to donate now and take a day off. our pledge drive. Looking forward to that. Take some more calls now, though. Dave in Reedstown is up next. Dave, hello to you.
Hi, thanks. I've had 3 basal cell carcinomas removed surgically that were horrendously expensive. And I don't have any insurance. I have a 4th one that's, again, about the 1/4 inch in diameter, and that probably needs to be taken off. But the last one cost me $2,000. I don't have insurance. And I'd like to say that I think that surgeons are really making an off, not just dermatology, but in our healthcare in general, are making out like bandits. I mean, this was Dr. Snow at the UW Clinic, and he went from room to room to room. It takes less than 5 minutes for him to cut that little thing out. And I think he was making tens of thousands of dollars a day. And secondarily, despite all the warnings and stuff, it seems like in the last few years you see all these young people, the trend is now to shave your head and not wear a hat, like with construction workers and even bikers. I mean, these guys are going along and their heads and faces are just fried from, wind and sun. And carpenters and stuff, they're up on roofs and they're just getting burned. And I think so you're falling down as far as education goes. Even though I understand you have a right to wear a hat or not, but I'll take your comments. Thanks.
All right. Thank you for calling.
Dr. Snow and the Mohs surgeons, Dr. Fred Mohs invented a technique where they take off layer after layer, and you can get by far the best cure rate of basal cell skin cancers and squamous cell skin cancers by doing that technique. It's a technique that we usually use for those 1% or of toughest skin cancers, or those that have come back or are near vital areas, like if it's close to your eye, you might want to have that done. For the standard basal cell skin cancer removal in a dermatologist's office, I think you'd find that there are no facility charges like in a hospital situation, and that you'd find that you could find a dermatologist that you could negotiate with on how much would be a reasonable amount to pay for its removal. I've had a few patients that both the patient and I have been convinced that that's a basal cell skin cancer, that they don't have any insurance, and then we've decided that, well, we both think it's a skin cancer. Why do we want to even check it under the microscope? Because we already know that. So there are ways of doing this, but I don't think you're going to find that way in a big institution, because big institutions are big institutions, and they have all kinds of rules. Secondly, are we falling down on educating people about the dangers of the sun? Well, I suppose as anybody gets a sunburn, one could pin that on the dermatologist for not doing enough. But I think everybody got it that you shouldn't get a sunburn, and everybody's got it that you probably shouldn't weigh 300 pounds. And you know, I think there's a little bit that of these things that society needs to own themselves.
Yeah. Yeah, you may well be right on that one. Thank you very much for that question, and thanks for your comment there, Dr. Niles. Let's go to John in Milwaukee. John, hi to you.
Hi. About 10 years ago, I had a squamous cell cancer removed on my chest. It was kind of, I don't know, you call it tear-shaped or like a little drop, blood red. And when it healed, it never completely healed. It turned into a raised red scar. And maybe a few years ago, I had that shaved off in the hopes that it would flatten it out and keep it from spreading. But it has come back and has got slightly longer. And I've been told by the dermatologist that shaving it again and then cortisone shots, perhaps 1, 2, or 3 over a period of several months, would possibly flatten it and keep it from spreading too much. And I'd like your opinion on that and if there's any bad side effects with cortisone.
Sure. Scars, there are sort of 3 types of scars. I'll just go over those briefly. You know, every time we have an injury or we have something removed, there will be a scar. And if the scar is pretty tiny, well, it's still a scar.
we can have lumpy scars where the lumpiness is confined to the spot of the scar, not any bigger, and that's called a hypertrophic or an overgrown scar. And then keloids are scars that spread out beyond where the injury was and can get quite large. These hypertrophic scars and the keloids are oftentimes very sensitive and touchy, and oftentimes they'll occur on the chest and upper back. So you can see the commercials for the heart surgery and see the guy with the scar down the middle of his breastbone that's all thick and lumpy. Well, that's that kind of scar because it's on the middle of your chest. One can get a keloid or a thickened scar. Shaving it off without injecting the cortisone probably doesn't get you very far and may even make the scar worse because you're making a new scar. But injecting cortisone is usually a terrific way of taking care of it, usually one or two or possibly three injections. Although they hurt while they're being done, there are really no important side effects at all because it's not a lot of cortisone and it doesn't really get into your body, just sort of hangs around in that scar and changes how fast the leathery part of the scar is manufactured.
All right. There you have it. Thank you, John. Appreciate your call. Here's an email from another John, this one in Milwaukee. He says, I have a small lesion at the base of my left nostril that's fine over 90% of the year, but once or twice a year it forms a scab for a couple of weeks and then it disappears. Not visible most of the time. Do I need to do something about it? And if I do, do I need to do it when it's visible?
It's probably something called a fibrous papule of the nose, which just means a little bump on the nose. It's basically just more nose in that little spot compared with the rest of your skin. And they tend to have a blood vessel that's on the surface of it. And this may be really small, a 16th of an inch or a millimeter or two in diameter. And John probably has the problem. It bleeds when he's got a cold and he's blowing his nose 50 times a day, and then he finally rubs that blood vessel open, and then it bleeds for a week or two, and then it heals up again. It can be removed easily by injecting some Novocaine and shaving it off, and it should be visible all year round. So he could have it done anytime, and if it's not that big a deal, he doesn't have to have it done.
Let's go to Eric in New Berlin now. Eric, hi to you.
Hello, doctor. Thank
Morning.
You for taking my call. I have what I would say is a severe problem with dermatitis, and I have been to dermatologists, and they seem to prescribe me some prednisone, which is quite effective for a short period of time, and then once I stop taking the prednisone, then the dermatitis returns again.
Yep. Where is the dermatitis?
It's basically all over my body. It's just white. I think I would call it exfoliative. It's just white, flaking skin. It's worse in some parts, like on my ankles and around my arms, but it's pretty much all over my body, really.
How itchy are you?
I'm not very itchy. That's the funny thing. It doesn't seem to really itch at all. But I just know that the long-term effects of prednisone wouldn't be good,
right.
And I just wondered if there was any other way to combat this.
I think there are a lot of other ways. I'm surprised that you have dermatitis or eczema and it's not itchy. That's sort of in the definition. So it may be that you have other dry skin or other things going on, but we can do lots of stuff for that, I think. I would probably talk to patients about making sure that they're not drying their skin out too much when they take a shower.
Okay.
So, for instance, maybe it would be soft water, Dove soap, don't scrub, maybe using a bar of soap rather than one of those liquids that just make a lot of lather and take off all the oil from your skin.
Okay.
Maybe using some baby oil on the wet skin after you're done taking a shower.
Right.
Wipe the water off and with your hand, and then put a little bit of baby oil in your palm and rub that in.
Okay.
Then I think there are some greasy cortisones and some other lubricants that we can use on the surface. And then this is going to sound like heresy, but oftentimes eczema responds nicely to tanning.
Okay.
So summertime is better for eczema because humidities are higher and we're out in the sun a little bit. So if you notice that part of your tan skin now is a little bit better than your untanned skin, then that will give us a clue.
Okay.
So I think that there are lots of things that you can do. The way that the sun helps calm things down is if you have a farmer tan and you put poison ivy on your forearm and poison ivy on your chest, the poison ivy on your chest will be much worse than the poison ivy on your sun-exposed arm.
Okay.
So we have some simple things with lubricants and tanning that might help. There are plenty of other things so that you shouldn't have to go on prednisone.
Okay.
Thanks for calling.
Thank you.
Yeah, appreciate the call. Sally in Wayland, Minnesota, it's your turn. Hi, Sally.
Hi there. How are you doing today?
Good.
Good. I'm calling because for that guy that called who had the mole removed at UW Health. He didn't have insurance.
Mm-hmm.
I used to live in Madison, and I've gone to UW doctors, and they were really good. They were really, really good. But I also had really good insurance. Now I live in southeastern Minnesota, and I don't have any insurance, so I go to Rochester. I went to have a scary mole looked at, and the doctor said it was probably not cancerous, but she said she could zap it right then and there in the office, and she did. The bill was not that expensive, so I'm calling to let that guy know it makes a big difference where you get help, where you get care from. UW Health is good, but they're pricey. These smaller places, they can often take care of business right then and there.
All right. Dr. Niles, comment?
And they might even be good.
Yeah. yeah. I certainly would agree with that. Thanks, Sally, for calling. Appreciate your call. Oh, man. I'm thinking of a book, White Coats. Oh, gosh. White Coat. Jim Packard will give me the title. I'm trying to remember it, but it's a series of interviews. Oh, White Coat Wisdom, I bet it is. Yeah, White Coat Wisdom. It's a story about our interviews with, 40, 50 doctors from around Wisconsin, many of them from small communities, some from large communities. And it's quite impressive to read about their work, these men and women who serve as physicians all over the state. Many of them, all of those folks, are very highly trained and very good doctors.
You know, people do get good at their craft after a while, whatever craft that is. And people spend a lot of time thinking and mulling over situations and seeing if they could do it better a different way or coming up with some other solutions. Innovation doesn't only happen at universities. There's lots of brain power out there that's churning.
Thanks again, Sally. John in Wisconsin Dells, we turn to you now. Hi, John.
Hi there. Thanks for taking the call.
Sure.
I have a question. I had my head checked by my MD at a physical a couple of years ago, and I had some precancerous spots, which he prescribed a ointment cream. Put it on, he says, on a weekend because it'll blister just those places that are precancerous, which I did. It blistered. They're gone. And it's been 2 years. I'm wondering if that was a catch-all. Did it show everything? And do I need to monitor that?
Okay. There are a couple of different kinds of creams that one can use that get rid of precancerous growths and some that get rid of early skin cancers, too. It's probably easier for those creams to jack up your immune system to get rid of the milder ones than it is to get rid of the tougher ones. So if you see nothing, then you probably don't have anything. So if you feel nothing on your head, if it's nice and smooth, then you're in good shape. So I think that if you were left with some thicker, rough ones, you'd have those removed a different way. But I think you can look at sort of turning the clock back 5 years or so when you did that a couple of years ago, and you should be good.
Oh, that's excellent. I have the little rough spots that I'm told are natural with aging.
No, that's not true.
Oh, it isn't? Okay.
those little rough guys on your scalp, if you're bald like other people, those are the precancerous ones. If you can sort of pick them off, then those are the precancerous ones. If you still have some of that cream, you might want to use it on those areas, or maybe you'll just wait a year or two and do it again, or maybe from time to time you'll have someone freeze those with liquid nitrogen. There are some keratoses that aren't related to sun, the seborrheic keratoses that you'll get, and I just can't determine which one it is over the phone.
Sure.
Oh, well, that encourages me to go ahead and have them checked again with my next physical. And one quick one, what impact does smoking have on the issues we've been talking about today? And I'll hang up and listen. Thanks.
Smoking does increase the risk of skin cancer, and it certainly makes you look old.
Mm-hmm. So it does.
Yeah.
James in Ontario, Wisconsin. Hello.
Hello. Thanks for taking my call. My question is in regard to treating actinic keratosis with creams, and there was some talk about that in the previous call, particularly with reference to a product called Curaderm. Maybe you're not able to mention product names, but what in general would you have to say about skin cancer creams, especially for precancerous treatments?
I think what I would say is if you have 3 sun damaged spots on your face, it's easy just to have the liquid nitrogen done, and you don't have to do anything at home. It's done, it's taken care of, it heals in a week and a half, you're done. If you have a full forehead full of 40 sun damaged spots, then I think the creams, and there are a number of them, creams can be very helpful. You do have to walk through a little hell for a month while your face looks all red and inflamed and might be a little tender, but the result after that is pretty good.
Thank you very much.
All right. Thank you for calling. And on to George in Watertown. Hi, George.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. I seem to have several what feel like small pimples on the back of my neck, kind of at the base of my skull, in my hairline. And they flare up from time to time. They get very painful. I'm thinking it may be an infected oil gland or a hair follicle, and they will go away one day, and the next day I'll have 2 or 3 of them, and then they'll go away for a couple of days, and then I have a couple others that pop up, you know, half an inch to one side or the other, and I'm wondering what the best treatment is to get rid of them. They're just really annoying.
Sure. These are infected hair follicles, or pimples, or little cysts, or sometimes happen after you have your neck clipped when you have a haircut. Sometimes that hair is just at the right length where it sort of grows right back down into your skin, and then you have this pimply, messy thing. To prevent those, I generally use a benzyl peroxide soap. These are available without a prescription. Panoxyl is one brand name, benzyl peroxide soap. And that helps unclog things, kill some bacteria, dries things out. It's great for on the back of your neck. So that would be a good thing to do as a preventative. And then if you can keep your fingers away from those areas, they'll tend to heal up a little bit faster also. But sometimes they develop real lumpy, scabby areas that we need to inject a little cortisone into to make go away, because it's hard to keep your fingers off of that.
Right.
Okay.
All right, very good. Thanks.
Thanks for calling. Appreciate your call. You can join in, too, if a few more minutes to go here with our guest, Dr. Dick Niles. Join us at 1-800-642-1234. Let's turn to Connie in Janesville next. Hi, Connie. Oh, hold on a second here. Let me get Connie on here. Connie, hi. Thank you for calling.
Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
I am thinking about having a lower facelift. I'm about to be 60. I look like I'm probably more 45 to 50 on the rest of my body, but I have these sagging jowl lines around my mouth and little fine lines around my mouth, and I've talked to several dermatologists. I've chosen one that I think is very good, double board certified plastic surgeon. And he's recommended doing something called dermabrasion around my mouth. And I'm just concerned about the long-term sensitivity or effect of that. I'll hang up and let you answer that question.
Sure. Dermabrasion, or sanding down the skin, we could call it, has been done in many different ways. The old way was used a drill and a diamond a brush or a diamond tip on it, and that's pretty harsh. But there are laser dermabrasions and other dermabrasions. That might help the wrinkling around your mouth. It won't help tighten up your skin. There are other things that one can do. There are some new lasers that can tighten up your skin just 5 or 10%, just if you put your fingers on your cheek and just sort of pull up towards your ear. That's the kind of thing that can happen. Retin-A on the surface or Renova can help with the wrinkles. So there are things that can be done.
My concern about the dermabrasion is that sometimes there's some pigmentation problems afterwards where you're sort of encouraged or asked not to go in the sun for a long time. And can we really do that? Is that really something that you're going to do? And are you going to end up with blotchy pigmentation afterwards?
So those are some things that you need to consider or and certainly ask that doctor about when you talk with him or her again. Thanks, Connie. Steve in Madison, your turn. Hi, Steve.
Good morning.
Hi.
I'm worried for this fellow who had the basal cell procedures done before and finds it costs $2,000. And it's not often going to be mentioned on Wisconsin Public Radio, but I know other people who have been in similar situations who've gone down to Mexico. So if that fellow wants to simply Google basal cell surgery plus Mexico, you will find some economical and perfectly useful solutions down there.
What do you think, Dr. Niles?
I don't practice in Mexico, although I like the beach and the tequila, but there may be some places that one can get good care down there. I'm sure there are. I would think, though, that one doesn't have to make it the most expensive procedure doing it in the hospital. I think many dermatologists will do things in their offices for less than the price of the flight down to Mexico.
And with that, I think we'll close. We have about a minute to go here. Anything in the way of final comments, Dr. Niles?
Well, we had sort of a funny summer, and I don't think we had as much sun exposure as ordinarily we would all like to get. I'm not one of those that says stay in the basement and never go out in the sun, but I think it's important not to get a sunburn, to be careful with that. There are sunscreens that are thin and alcohol-y and watery that are very convenient to use and don't clog up pores and make more acne for patients. There are good technological things. And then just, you know, using your brain is probably a good idea most of the time.
Yeah. Wear a hat.
When you go to Noah's Ark, you might get burned, you know?
Yeah. On that note, we'll close. Dr. Niles, thanks. You'll come back and be with us again, I hope?
Happy to. Anytime.
Dr. Dick Niles. He's a practicing dermatologist in Oconomowoc and Watertown. He's been doing it for more than 25 years. He's a member of the American Academy of Dermatology, knows a whole lot about preventing and treating skin cancers or carcinomas. And we'll have him back, and we will visit with him again. Well, if you've been outside across a good part of Wisconsin, you would have been just about blown away. We'll talk about the wind and the weather and the climate coming up next with our weather guys, Steve Ackerman and John Martin, here on the Ideas Network.